Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills.
Yes, believe it or not, we have one in this country. It's old, it's very weathered, and some may say outlandishly dated. But it's there nonetheless. What am I talking about? The U.S. Constitution. I've asked Lincoln Steed to talk with us on this subject and explain why we need it and what exactly is happening to it these days. Lincoln, the time is yours.
Yes, thank you. Constitution, let's talk about something that is almost unknown in our age.
That's true.
Over the years, and more recently, I've heard people mention the Constitution, and by their comments, I'm more and more suspicious that first, they don't know the Constitution in any meaningful way, and secondly, they usually say Constitution, but they mean the Declaration of Independence,
yes,
which is a more memorable document, much shorter and more racy in its style. Written by Thomas Jefferson, essentially, and approved, of course, by the Revolutionary Congress. But the rule of law and the guiding legal document for the United States is the U.S. Constitution. And I'd like to talk a bit about it, because in light of recent events, particularly where the actual president of the United States, under attack for disobeying the Constitution on one particular area, although I think you could choose more than one, made a comment about the phony, his word, the phony emoluments clause.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty heavy stuff, short of the Supreme Court deliberating and coming up with a legal equivalent. Here, just off the cuff, the chief officer of the government says that it's phony. I mean, that's quite troubling. So I just want to spend a few minutes going through elements of the Constitution, because it takes longer than 15 minutes to read. Although it's not long. No. I would encourage every listener to spend half an hour, wouldn't go far wrong, to read through and slowly and to think about the Constitution. I want to share something that most people probably have forgotten. Anyone that studied history and remembers would know that the first president of the United States, George Washington, was actually the president of the Constitutional Congress that came up with the Constitution. He wrote a letter of transmittal to Congress when they came up with the Constitution. This was part of the formal transmittal of the Constitution that had been ironed out by the states. And I'm not going to read all of it, but he says, "It is obviously impracticable in the federal government of these states to secure all rights of independent sovereignty to each." He's talking about the 13 states. Mm-hmm. "And yet provide for the interests and safety of all. Individuals entering into society must give up a share of liberty to preserve the rest." Hmm. Now, that flies against what people are saying about uneven representation from the states and all the rest. Yeah. They don't understand the Constitution. It was designed to give a semblance of equality between big and small states and to sort of bring into the whole varying religions and attitudes and even laws in these different states under a sort of an umbrella institution. And he says, "The magnitude of the sacrifice must depend as well on situation and circumstances as on the object to be attained." And then he says, "In all our deliberations on this subject, we kept steadily in our view that which appears to us the greatest interest of every true American, the consolidation of our union, in which is involved our prosperity, felicity, safety, perhaps our national existence. This important consideration, seriously and deeply impressed on our minds, led each state in the convention to be less rigid on points of inferior magnitude than might have been otherwise expected. And thus, the Constitution which we now present is the result of a spirit of amity and of that mutual deference and concession which the peculiarity of our political situation rendered indispensable." It's a bit of a flowery way of saying it was, this is the only way we could do it.
Right.
So I just want to take a few minutes and hop, skip, and a jump through the Constitution. But I'll start with one thing that's right on everyone's minds at the moment. Again, the president, in fits of anger and foolishly, has accused whistleblowers and others of treason, of being traitors and committing treason. Mm-hmm. The Constitution says, very plain, it says, "Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. And that thought dwelt upon is quite troubling if you think through in our present situation. The Constitution was based on the people's power, and again, this is something that people have forgotten. I know in our own Seventh-day Adventist Church, as we look to prophecy, we see in Revelation 13 a description of a power that just must be the United States, a lamb-like beast, a little bit like a lamb, but aggressive and increasingly compelling people to act against their conscience. And we've held that those horns can be seen as the two defining characteristics of this emerging country, and emerging in the context of George Washington. The two horns, what are these principles? Republicanism and Protestantism. And republicanism was the principle that the people are the source of power, not the rulers. And that's why it says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, same key as Washington just wrote, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And as I look at it, I can see their logic. For example, you can't be a representative in Congress unless you've been 7 years a citizen of the United States. But that's a very interesting thing. Here they're presenting the Constitution, and you've been 7 years a citizen. What they really were referring back to is when the war ended in 1783. There's barely enough time from there to have a residency requirement to take up office in the new government. Yeah. They didn't want Englishmen during the conflict or the cessation to come over and present themselves as bona fide Americans and enter the government and then basically deliver it back to England. Right. That's what was going on. There are very particular things in the Constitution. Other than that, they make no sense today. Why 7 years a citizen? And there are other things that really tie this Constitution to its time and place. For example, in Section 9, it says the migration or importation of persons in any of the states now existing, they can't be prohibited by Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax of duty may be imposed not exceeding $10.
I wish that was still in force. Wouldn't that be nice?
In a way, these have been made a mockery of because it's impossible to get a dollar equivalent because that would not be a legally defensible determination. The exchange rates vary all the time, inflation rates. So we're sort of locked into antiquities in some of these things. And in that regard, what some people are saying, you know, that there might be some need to bring the Constitution into the modern era. And Thomas Jefferson himself said that it's sort of foolish to stay with the same clothes you had when you were a child.
Yes.
You've got to grow with the time. Yeah. But that's not the same as removing the legal infrastructure, which some people are trying to do. What surprised me, even though I knew it, but to read it again, it does not say directly that people vote for the president. All it talks about at great length is the electors from each state, and it varies, of course, according to the population, but the electors are how they are chosen, and then they choose the president. And I believe most people have forgotten this. Every election day, we talk about the electoral college and, you know, whether you're winning the state or that. But it's all a bit of a charade because it's very plain from the Constitution that the electors have the direct power of electing the president. And in our era, they become promised, depending on how the votes are cast. But they're under no legal obligation to actually vote for that person when they assemble.
Really?
Which is one reason why most states prohibit them, the electors, from traveling out of the state during this period because they don't want them going to some other point and then electing another person.
Huh.
And the initial intent that's in the Constitution is that the electors vote. They cast two votes. One has to be outside their own state. And of their votes, the winner is president, the runner-up is vice president.
Huh.
And since parties were not imagined in the Constitution ever, we've had in our past cases of a president from one party and a vice president from another. So we've moved in many ways away from the thinking and even the practice of the Constitution, and no one seems to be bothered by it. Something very relevant in Section 3, Paragraph 6, it says the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. In Section 2, Article 5, the House of Representatives shall choose their Speaker and other officers and have the sole power of impeachment. But the Senate, the one I started reading in Section 6, says they will have the sole power to try all impeachments. Doesn't say how they have to vote or whatever. You know, there's a lot of people being challenging things now. We are running according to the Constitution at the moment. But that said, nobody has ever been successfully impeached. It's worth remembering.
Well, I think that's an excellent idea that you gave there, that we take a few minutes out of our busy schedule, sit down with the Constitution, because it does two things for me, in my mind. It solidifies some things that I may have not been clear about, but it also corrects some of the things I'm hearing people say these days, Lincoln.
Of course. That's why I'm sharing it. And I know it. I've read it before, but looking at it again carefully in light of what's happening at the moment, it's obvious to me that people are not aware of it. Even our legislators, I think.
Yes, yes.
Like, here's one. I shouldn't elaborate much on it, but in Section 8, it says Congress shall have the power, and it lists them in many points, and it says the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Congress regulate commerce.
Congress.
And it says Congress will constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. That's what they've done at the moment in their inquiries.
Yeah.
They have the power to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. That's Congress, not the president. They have the power to declare war, grant letters of mark and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. We lived through an era after 9/11 where by edict it was determined, as the vice president at the time says, you know, we're going to play rough.
Yeah.
And they set aside the laws of the Geneva Convention and so on. And not coincidentally against the Constitution. It says Congress have the power to declare war. Congress have the power to raise and support armies. Congress shall provide for the calling forth of militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. It goes on and on, but it also says particularly that the executive power is only commander-in-chief in time of war when it's called up by Congress.
Well, our time has flown by, Lincoln, and I really appreciate this insight because, again, I say, it makes you see where we are straying these days.
It's a reminder, too, that religion is so important, freedom of religion, but it only appears twice in the Constitution. A very succinct statement says no religious test for public office, and the First Amendment says that Congress will make no law establishing religion, in other words, supporting it in any way, or any law prohibiting the free exercise of religion.
All right. Very good. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. Lincoln, thank you very much. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone.
If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.